Hello and welcome to the Midwest Bias Podcast. I'm KJ, and this is going to be the shortest introduction before we bring out our Midwest guest co-host in the short Midwest Bias history, because we have no podcast reviews, boo. But I do have one update. The Hall of Famer is now the proud, so far anyway, the proud customer of Verizon Wireless. She has left those two terrible carriers we talked about last week. They have assured her that there will be no charge for the mobile hotspot device. We don't believe that, so we'll keep you updated. Since we've been flooded with emails wondering what the conclusion to this saga is, if they didn't keep their word, I'm sure we will let you know, even if you don't care. All right, that's it. Let's move on to our Midwest guest co-host.
Time for the Midwest guest co-host. She's the best co-host of the day. Yeah, it's the Midwest guest co-host. Yeah, you betcha she'll know just what to say.
Yes, it is time for our Midwest guest co-host. Please welcome back to the show from the dairy farming loaded, very Midwestern state of Michigan, Kim Wilson.
Ah, thanks so much, KJ. Yes, we are very much dairy farm loaded. We can actually get, in my city, I can get direct from the dairy farm deliveries.
Fantastic. Like milk or eggs or both?
Both. Cheese, ice cream.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. So do you have like an actual milkman with like a box of six little pint jars that he leaves at your front stoop?
If I wanted to, I could absolutely have it. But I don't really do well with milk and milk products. So I don't do that. But I do know of the service that can make that happen.
That is fantastic. So according to Tony Vanderlinden, who has since clarified his position on whether or not dairy farms equal Midwestern states, since we know that they're all over the country, he said you have to know a dairy farmer and be within the boundaries. Mm. And I think you know one if one could deliver eggs to you.
Well, I mean, I know of a farm. But then also my cousin's father-in-law does, he doesn't have a dairy farm, but he does have farm. He has a farm, and he has farm equipment in which he does hay and pumpkins and squash and corn. So I would say that I do know a farmer, not a dairy farmer, though.
Yeah, well, you know, it's very specific, Tony says, dairy farmer. It says here, just a point of clarification regarding dairy farmers. You must know a dairy farmer and be within the boundaries to be considered Midwest. Boundaries include Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, and a bit of South Dakota, Wisconsin, Missouri. Dairy is big in the Northeast and Southwest, but they certainly aren't Midwesterners. He doesn't even list Michigan. Sorry, Tony, this does not hold water. Michigan has to be on the list.
Michigan must be on the list. There's no way you can't have Michigan on the list.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tony's with the Hall of Famer kind of on this, although the Hall of Famer would just say, again, Midwest, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, her definition, his definition, we're getting into some definite gray areas at this point in time.
Yeah, and I think we discussed, as last week's episode went on, that it may be more about quick trips. And I don't think Michigan has any quick trips.
No, we don't. Nope.
No.
Or at least I haven't seen them, so.
They haven't branched to Michigan yet. And there was one other thing. Do you remember? Oh, I know what it is. Do you give the one finger wave on the steering wheel, which may even be a better definition than whether you know a dairy farmer?
Okay, so I give the whole hand.
Oh, is your hand resting?
Yeah, resting at the top of the steering wheel.
Yeah, okay.
And I'll raise up four fingers and I'll wave.
Okay, but not the thumb. The thumb stays gripped around the steering wheel?
Correct.
Okay, so for all five fingers, it'd be a different regional part of the country, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, five fingers, if I'm holding up my hand, that's a map in Michigan. So
exactly.
four fingers, I'm just giving a wave. you know, to a person, especially I live in a city, so it's a congested area. And often when you are trying to get up and down some of the side streets, you have to get over for somebody to pass you. So I will often just, you know, give a quick wave. I might even take my hand off the wheel at that point in time and give a wave. Yeah. But mostly it is, if I have my hand on the steering wheel, I'm giving, you know, a quick four, you know, hi. So wave.
Okay. And I wasn't thinking about this, but I ended up doing this the other day. I was driving and I did the two finger wave, and I was pretty adamant last week on the podcast episode that I only use one finger, and that was, I guess, a lie because I use two.
Well, I mean, certain times you might want to only use one finger.
But, yeah,
you know,
exactly.
That's a whole different process.
Absolutely. Okay, so before we move on, I didn't have you do this the first time you were on because I wasn't having anyone do it at the time, but we need to have you satisfy the Karen condition.
That's right. I want to know this about everybody. How in the world do you know KJ?
Before we move on, so please explain, how in the world do we know each other?
So I am a loyal little with the Tony Kornheiser show, and I have been listening to him since about 2002, 2003. So I have gotten to know names over the years of people who often email into the show. And then once the jingles started happening, start hearing some of the more common names. Yours was always one of the names. And it stuck out because you were one of the only females really doing jingles.
Yep.
And then once you and Jason started speaking at Tangents, I really started interacting on Twitter with you and Jason and the Speaking of Tangents Twitter. And then once baseball season started coming around, you and I would talk about baseball, and it just kind of went downhill from there. So, you know, it's very much a Twitter friendship at this point in time because we have not met in person.
We have not met in person.
Which stinks, but we will try and remedy that hopefully within, you know, a year. So.
Oh, absolutely. Within a year.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you, first of all, for satisfying Karen's curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, we would use this time to answer questions sent in from listeners, but I got to say, I'm a bit bummed out here. Just like we have no new podcast reviews again this week, we also have no new questions.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm pretty bummed out. So rather than tell you, Kim, sorry, we don't need you this week, I decided we would do something a little bit different.
Okay.
But please, for the love of all things holy, send us more questions, please. Not you, Kim. Everyone else.
I mean, I could do better, too. So, you know.
Well, you have sent questions,
yeah,
which I appreciate. The questions are the backbone of this segment. And we really do need more, so please email them to us at midwestbiaspod@gmail.com. Okay, so back to this. We're going to do something different. And Kim, you and I both love baseball,
like
you mentioned. And since we both love Midwest baseball teams, Kim, you love the Tigers. I love the Twins.
Yes.
And since this is the Midwest Bias Podcast, we are bringing you a recap of the four-game series between the Tigers and the Twins this past weekend at Target Field. And I have to say, Kim, if this doesn't get people to send questions in, I don't know what will.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, what do you have to say about this series?
Well, it was tough because I didn't get to watch the whole series, but I got to watch enough of it to say the Tigers should have had at least two of those games.
Mm-hmm. And what happened was the Twins swept them in a four-game series, which doesn't happen often anywhere around the majors. And I really can't believe that it happened with the terrible Twins.
Well, you were on Thursday when you and I were chatting on Twitter. You were just hell-bent that the Tigers were going to go 4-0
in
this series.
But
in
my defense, I did think it was only a three-game series. Not a
four. Oh, game. Okay. Okay.
But yeah, I didn't. The Twins just stink, and apparently so did the Tigers, which, okay. If we go back to, I don't remember if it was the episode where you were on. I know you were on when Patrick Moffitt was on, But was it that episode where I predicted, or was it a different? I don't remember. I predicted how the Twins were going to do, and I think I gave them 85 or 90 wins, and that's not going to happen.
No, I don't think. You know what, though? I think between the Tigers and the Twins, we're close to 85 wins together.
Yes. Good point. Good point. I guess I'll have to take that at this point. It's a great time to go. if the Twins win four in a row, it was a great time, great way to go into the All-Star game. But when teams go hot into the All-Star game, I worry that they're going to come out cold, because that's a nice break.
Well, much like when the Tigers would go into the World Series, they would sweep the championship series, and then they'd get into the World Series and just completely just lose it because they were out of practice. So any time that they went in and they swept, or they, you know, won 4-1, I was like, well, they're done. They're not going to win the World Series. Unfortunately, I was very pessimistic at that point in time. But I had every reason to be, because they got cold.
Yep. Yeah. And they got swept, didn't they?
One of them, they got swept. One of them, I think two of them, like 2012, I think they got either swept or 4-1. One of the ones against the Giants. I know they got swept. I think that was 2014, maybe.
Man, they had good teams, though.
They did. They had
Verlander and Scherzer.
Yep, and Porcello. I mean, David Price. Yeah, I mean, you name it. That was just a killer, you know, rotation, and we just did nothing with it.
Yeah, no. I'm pretty sure I was cheering for the Tigers at that point in the World Series, and it was a bummer for me. Not even a well, you know that I'm a former Tiger fan. My childhood, I was a Tiger fan, so it was hard for me to watch. And I assume for someone that's a diehard Tiger fan, it was not fun to watch.
Oh, I was throwing things. I mean, throwing things at the TV. It was not a pretty scene, you know.
No, and so for two of these games. The final two games of the Tigers Twin series, the Tigers had, it was like deja vu. The Tigers had a 4-0 lead both games. And then the Twins came. I didn't watch hardly any of it either, but I was listening to the last game of the series while playing golf. And the Tigers had a 4-0 lead both games. And then they blew it, and the Twins came back. But the final game, you thought, okay, this is it. The Twins gave up a grand slam in the top of the ninth to go down one run.
Yep.
And I thought, okay, there's no way. Well, then they came back in the bottom of the ninth and tied it up, and then they won it in the 10th.
It was a shootout yesterday. I was running yesterday because I was trying to find a small window of opportunity to get a training run in when it was not raining. And yesterday I found a very small window to do so. So I got out of the car at the place I was going to run. Got out of the car, and it was 4-1. So it was fifth inning. And so as I was going around and doing my laps, I looked, and in the seventh inning, I could see where it was heading. And I was like, okay, the Twins are going to win, whatever. So I get back into the car, and it's the ninth inning, and they're telling me about the grand slam. And I'm like, oh, okay. I like where this is headed. So then, you know, it goes into the 10th, and I get home, and I didn't even want to hit the shower until I saw what the final of the game was going to be. I see the home run, and I went, okay, fine. I see how this is going to go. I see how this entire series went. And I was very upset, but you know, what are you going to do? You know, you're going into the All-Star break, and I feel like there's going to be some changes coming down the pipeline. The trading deadline's coming up. So it'll be interesting.
The Tigers and the Twins are probably deal players, won't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. And AJ Hinch has said that.
Your favorite, AJ Hinch.
Yeah. Good Lord. he has said that, you know, yeah, we might be in a trading spot. We might be dealing, but you're going to give us players. So it doesn't sound like he really wants Al Avila to just necessarily trade to trade. So.
Okay. We'll see. I'll be interested to see what the Twins do. Now, speaking of the All-Star game, I have to point something out specifically for this year's All-Star game. Four pitchers who pretty much stunk it up while they were with the Twins are on the All-Star team this year with different teams. four, and two of whom play for the division rival White Sox.
Mm-hmm.
We got Kyle Gibson for Texas. He was really bad in Minnesota, especially his last year, but he also had some really bad health issues, so I gave him a pass for his final year. Then you got Lance Lynn of the White Sox and Liam Hendricks of the White Sox. Two pitchers from the Twins go to the White Sox. Ryan Pressly for Houston. Why? Why? What happens? Is this like a coaching thing for the Twins? Is it a development thing where that's it? You got to move on. We have to keep going. Is it a lack of money to keep, you know, they can't keep those people in the small market? Why does this happen to the Twins? And I don't even think I even have to mention the biggest of all, which was David Ortiz. Big Poppy was a Twin. And they get rid of him. He goes and he does what he does in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
What's this all about? Why does this always happen to the Twins?
I don't know. I feel like it happens a lot to actually the Midwest teams, though.
Exactly. I feel like they're small market.
Yep. They go somewhere where you get a bigger, you know, life.
Opportunities,
I feel like. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, where they just get an opportunity to shine and, you know, they get more media attention maybe. I don't know. I feel like the small market teams get just as much media attention as, say, a New York or, you know, a Boston.
You must be joking at this point.
You know, I mean, it's all over pretty much the, you know, like the local radio stations and the local TV. Obviously, we're a little nicer than those media outlets in, say, New York and Boston. But maybe that's the attention that they want, you know.
Maybe. And then you could do it the flip side, like Josh Donaldson had a killer year for the Braves, and then he came over here, and he's just been nonstop hurt. So he hasn't even had a chance to perform. So there's something to be said for maybe bad deals or, like what you're saying, it's just a smaller area. They want more attention. I don't know what it is, but I'm tired of it. Maybe we need to ask a baseball expert like Sully, or maybe like someone who can dig deep into the stats as to, Am I over exaggerating this? Am I just thinking this is only the Twins, or does this happen all over? Like a step, maybe Luke Overby. Oh, hang on.
It's the name drop of the week.
Ooh, yeah.
Luke could maybe help us out with some stats. I don't know.
Yeah, young stat man needs to step it up.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I had to point that out. Four pitchers. Former Twins, all in the All-Star game.
Oof.
And well, the Twins have one player in the All-Star game, Nelson Cruz, DH, and I don't even know how he made it because he honestly hasn't been hitting all that great this year either.
The Tiger Killer.
Victory lap? Yeah, the Tiger Killer.
The Tiger Killer, man. When he goes on a streak against the Tigers, I just see everybody on the Twitter just exploding that are Tigers fans. Just stop pitching to him.
Yep.
Stop pitching to him. Just stop pitching to him. That's all they keep reiterating. And yet, you know, I don't think he did very well in this series, though, did he?
I don't think he did, no.
No. He's been really cooling off of late. But it could be, as you said, a victory lap if he is, you know, going on to retire.
Up, you know? Yeah. Okay, now that was a good 10 minutes on Midwest baseball. That was awesome. Okay, now before we move on, I wanted you to have the opportunity to be on the right side of this disagreement, shall we say, between the Hall of Famer and I.
Okay.
We have had lots of people give their opinions, and sadly, most all of them have been wrong. Before we move on to that piece, I'll read an email that came in from Ed Budd about this, and then I'll ask you. Ed says, IMCO, all caps. Now, I thought this was IMHO in my humble opinion. Mm-hmm. So either this is a typo or he means it. Have you ever seen IMCO?
IMCO. No.
It's either a typo or is he trying to say like instead of humble, like go the other way in my conceited opinion? I don't know. I don't see Ed doing that. I think it might just be a typo.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a typo. We're going to go with in my humble opinion. He says, I've never heard it called anything other than a brain freeze. Going, and I think this is a typo too. He said going either Hofer. I think he meant going with the Hofer again. Mm-hmm. Couple is precisely two. Several is three or maybe four. A few is dependent on the quantity one is taking them from. A few peanuts, so quote unquote, a few peanuts from a bag with several hundred could be a dozen or so. A few eggs from a carton might be two, three, or four.
Okay.
So that was Ed's opinion. Then he also threw this one in. Why do you think Ben and Jerry's ice cream is made in Vermont? Could it be that there are dairy farms there?
Ooh, shots fired on that one.
I think so. But they weren't shots at me because I think I pretty much specifically said Vermont.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right, so Kim, first of all, ice cream headache versus brain freeze or something else. Go.
It is, of course, 100% brain freeze. I apologize. I have not heard. I have heard of ice cream headache, but it is not what we typically state. And ours was mostly from Slurpees at 7-Eleven. We always used brain freeze.
Yep. Okay. I don't know why that's never caught on with me. I don't know. Okay. Couple versus few versus several. You're 0-for-1 so far.
Well, I do agree in the couple being two. Absolutely. Okay. A couple is two, no matter how you slice it. Mm-hmm. Few and several, in my head, are mostly interchangeable.
Yes.
I could use few for 3 to 5, but I could also use several for 3 to 5. Mm-hmm. You know, if I was to go more, I might say a plethora. But mostly... Yeah. I would say few and several are interchangeable in my head. I don't think there is a distinction as to if I could have a few of those could I have several of those, though I might still end up with 3 to 4 in my hand.
Okay, so you are 1-for-1. This third one will be the tiebreaker. And I say that because I think I made my opinion that couple, several, and few are all interchangeable. But I was easily talked down from the couple. I can see why that would be called two. So I'm okay with that answer. The last one. What is the actual purpose of a car horn? When do you use a car horn?
I use it typically if I'm sitting at a light. And the person in front of me, and the light has been green for quite some time. That's when I'll give it just a quick toot and, you know, to see if they're paying attention.
Right? Friendly honk.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to lay on it in any way, shape, or form.
Okay. Good.
I have not been in many situations of late where I've had to slam on it, but typically that would happen on the interstate. Mm-hmm. And people not paying attention to the fact that they're weaving in and out of a lane.
So a teachable moment, sort of. You're behind them, like, hey, pay attention, you might crash. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, don't mosey into my lane while I'm just doing my thing, minding my own business.
Stay in your lane.
Yeah. Actually, I went to Pennsylvania on Saturday. It was a one-day trip there and back, Pennsylvania. Wow. It's like 4.5, 4:45, just depending on traffic and all that. And I did not experience anything like that. So it was very nice. It was a very pleasant experience along the turnpike.
Okay. Well, that's a surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. Very
so
much so.
So you use it in addition to an emergency situation where you're about to get hit?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Well, we did have a situation here just the other day where someone was backing out of a parking lot and the Hall of Famer was driving and the guy was in a huge truck and we were right behind him, like in his blind spot. And we must not have been in his blind spot because he eventually saw us, but it was just right before he was about to hit us. And I did almost reach over for the horn at that moment because the Hall of Famer was not doing it. And I said, honk the horn. This is when you honk the horn. This is your moment. This is your emergency moment. And she's like, well, he saw me in time, but she froze and didn't know what to do. Like the guy was coming and, you know, it was one of those, you got to act fast situations and there were pedestrians in front of us. So she couldn't just slam on the accelerator to get out of there, which I have done where someone's about to back into me. I just go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there was no horn honking. So I think the Hall of Famer actually never uses the horn.
Basically, everything that I've been hearing, I don't think she knows that it exists.
Exactly.
You know, and there's nothing against her, you know, God bless her, but I just don't think that that's something that she really wants to use.
I think you're dead on with that one.
Yeah.
Okay, now before we move on to our guest expert, do you have anything that we've covered that I haven't given you an opportunity to talk about or give your opinion on? You were 2 for 3 there with agreement with me. So I'm very happy about that.
That means you might actually ask me back for another time. Yes. So, you know.
Yeah, maybe next time. I'll have you on after the Tigers and Twins play another series and we'll recap that again.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? I got nothing at this time. I do want to say that going back to the turnpike and everything, it was a very pleasant ride. So I think if everyone can keep up with this kind of driving post-pandemic, I think we might be okay. Everyone was pleasant. The rest areas were not very, you know, overly populated. It was a very pleasant drive. It made for a long day because I drove. My mom did not drive at all.
Yeah, that's a long haul. 8 hours in the car, 9 hours in the car in one day.
It was a long haul. But mom wanted to go to her family reunion, and she can't do that all in one day herself. She also could not stay there because it was at a campground, and she recently had some surgery. So, you know, surgery and campgrounds tend to fester in certain places, so we don't want to mix those two up together. Yep. So,
well, I'm glad it was pleasant for you.
Yeah. You know, and just getting back and getting into re-assimilating into society is what I keep calling it. And so, you know, last week I went to the movie theater.
Ooh, how did that go?
It was good. And it was packed. I was actually very surprised. I went and saw In the Heights.
Oh, and?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. Good. But it was a packed theater, and I didn't think that, you know, the first showing, it was a 3:40 showing. They were only showing it twice in that day. On the 4th of July was going to be that packed, but it was a packed show. But I've been trying to like slowly doing stuff like that. Not wearing my mask all the time, just trying to, you know, somewhat go back to a normal way of doing things. But I always keep a mask in my back pocket just in case.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to bring it because you never know.
Yeah.
But at any point, did you feel nervous about that amount of people in? You see, I don't think I'm ready for the movie theater. Now, I say that having just gone to a big outdoor concert, but the key word for me there is outdoor. So I'm wondering how you felt with the indoor, or was it outdoor? Was it a drive-in? I'm assuming it was not.
No, it was just a regular movie theater, but it's one of those where they have the big cushy chairs that recline back all that. Yes. So there's plenty of room, and there was nobody sitting next to me.
Good.
So it was good, except for people kept getting up. And I'm like, man, really? That's something I got to get. Yeah. And they were getting up during big musical numbers. And I wanted to turn and say, do you know that this is the biggest musical number in the movie?
Yeah.
You know,
they maybe weren't expecting a musical. Is that at all possible?
Maybe they didn't realize what they were stepping into. I don't know. But then I listened to Broadway podcasts, and they were saying, stay to the end of the credits. And I was the only one who knew to stay to the end of the credits, because there is a little quick scene at the end with Lin-Manuel Miranda and Christopher Jackson. Ooh. So
you heard it here too, folks.
There you go.
Go see In the Heights.
I was the only one to stay. And the poor little, you know, theater kids that wanted to clean out the theater, the little workers wanted to come in. And I'm like, hang on. I was told to just stay, just hold on.
Well, I'm happy. I have some hesitancy to see In the Heights because I'm not a big musical fan. And I didn't even see Hamilton on Disney Plus. I watched it, you know, I went on in Chicago to live theater. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'm kind of with Jeannie McManus. Oh, hang on.
It's the name drop. Of the week
on the Kornheiser show about musicals in the I don't know.
Oh man, I love them.
Would I like it?
You know, it's a really good story. It has a good storyline. The characters are well developed, since this was something that he's been trying to write this since seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
He finally got it on Broadway in 2008. So, it is well-developed characters and a really good storyline. It is different. I have heard that it's different from the stage musical. I have not seen that, the stage musical, but I have heard that it's different. But I heard that, you know, of the people who have seen it, enjoy both versions. So.
Okay. Well, I might have to reconsider that when I feel comfortable going to a theater again.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's all about everyone's comfort factor. I thought by going on the 4th of July that nobody would be there.
And that was wrong. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was very wrong. But it's okay, because in a month I have a concert at Comerica Park and it's going to be packed. And, I'm just trying to slowly put myself into these situations. I have a half marathon coming up. And I don't think there's going to be any COVID restrictions there. So we'll see, you know.
Yeah. Well, those are nice because they're outdoors and you're spread out, at least except for at the very beginning.
Right, right. Exactly. And I'm a back of the pack person, so I'm not catching up to anybody. So
okay. Well, Kim, thank you so much. You have been, without a doubt, the best Midwest guest co-host of the day.
Woohoo!
Are you ready to bring in our guest expert?
Absolutely.
All right.
It's time for a so-called expert to join the show. Probably from the east, west, or southern coast. Tell us what they know and where they think we should go.
Yes, it is time for our guest expert joining us today and bringing his, what should I say, Southern with a Midwest twist bias with him. Please welcome from Lexington, Kentucky, it's Todd Takei.
Hi.
Hi, Todd. Welcome to Midwest Bias.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm very honored to be here.
Absolutely. I think the first question is, are you drinking any beer?
I had a beer before the podcast. I didn't want things to go south.
Okay. Well, before we get started on your biases and your expertises and all that, we have to have you meet the Karen condition.
That's right. I want to know this about everybody. How in the world do you know KJ?
Just like Kim did earlier. So can you please explain how you and I know each other? And it's, I think, the sort of the same reason that you know how you know Kim, too. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes. We're all littles, but I know you from Twitter when you became a jingler very early on. And we interacted on Twitter before everything that started with Jingle Fest, even.
Yeah. Yep.
And then we first met at Jingle Fest 2.
The big one.
Yeah, the one, like, downtown at that giant venue.
Yes.
Yep. That was, like, invaded by other people that were not actual littles.
That's right. I'd forgotten that. Yes. And when Tony and all the gang from the show showed up.
Yes, and I got to meet Rachel that time.
Rachel. Oh, hang on.
It's the name drop of the week.
Yes, Rachel reports. Yes, she was there. She was there with me. That was the year the Hall of Famer could not come due to a family wedding obligation. So Rachel came with me. We had a great time.
And I met the Hall of Famer at Jingle Fest 4 and 5. Okay.
And when did you meet Kim? Because I have not yet met Kim face-to-face. You have.
I met Kim and also Craig Jones.
Oh, hang on.
It's the name drop. Of the week.
So is Mr. Jones one on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
And a couple other people in Detroit at a brewery about a month and a half before COVID shut everything down.
Oh, wasn't that long before COVID? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, that was our last beer trip for a long time.
Really?
Yes, very much so. I don't think I met up with anybody after that, really. That might have been the last time that I met up with a bunch of people.
Okay. And that was in Detroit?
Yeah.
It was at Kunin Brewing. They're known for doing really high alcohol beers that you would probably run away from.
Probably. Kim, were you going to say something?
I was just going to say it's spelled Q-U-H-E-N-N-E-N, I believe. So if anybody's looking that up.
K-U.
K-U. Okay. Yep.
K-U. Okay. Okay. So before we get started on your expertise, why don't you tell me, I mean, I know you live in Kentucky now.
Yes.
And you're from America's Dairyland, where there are lots of dairy farmers. So you have some Midwestern roots. So tell us about your Midwestern roots and maybe any other locational biases that I may be totally unaware of.
My parents were born and raised out in the Detroit, in the suburbs of Detroit, and that's where I was born. And I lived there for a few years, and then we moved to Iowa for a year. Then we moved to Wisconsin for about 3 or 4 years before we moved to Oklahoma and Arkansas. And now I'm in Kentucky.
Okay, so a couple questions come to mind right away. Okay. Anybody that follows Todd on Twitter knows that his avatar is a Brewers logo. So why the Brewers and not, for instance, the Tigers, since you were born in Detroit? And keep in mind that Kim, you know, is a huge Tigers fan.
Yes, and my family's not huge sports fans, but they generally love the Tigers. And the weird thing was when I was go back to Detroit to visit grandparents in the summer times, I would always ask, can we go to a ball game there? No one would ever take me. So I never got to go to Old Tiger Stadium.
Oh no.
But when I became of an age where sports and rooting for sports became something I was aware of, I was living in Madison, Wisconsin, and my best friend's mom listened to Brewers games religiously on the radio. So anytime we were over near their house, we were always listening to Brewers games. And if there was one on TV, we were always watching it. And this was right, maybe 1980. So a few years before they made their World Series run. So they actually became decent in my fandom. And then suddenly in the year that they went to the World Series, we moved down to Oklahoma in the middle of the season. And Oklahoma is St. Louis Cardinals country. And that's who they played in the World Series and lost.
They lost.
So
in
seven games.
Okay.
And my parents didn't let me watch the end of just about any of the games because they were too late and they wanted me to get enough sleep for school the next morning. And I resent them for that forever. They won't hear this podcast. And even if they did hear this podcast, they can know that I resent them because I did not get to see my Brewers, maybe the only time they'll ever make a World Series in my lifetime.
Well, you never know. I mean, unlike the Twins and the Tigers, the Brewers are actually playing quite well this year.
So far, so good. Fingers crossed. There was a year a few years ago where they had like a 9-game lead going into September 1st and they didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, I do kind of remember that.
So I don't get too excited.
I understand. I feel the same as a Twins fan. But I have a special place in my heart for Brewers. Well, I went to grad school and undergrad school in Wisconsin, so I met a lot of Brewers fans, and I've been to games at Miller Park. But the logo is the best logo in all of sports, so I'm always going to like the Brewers.
Agree. Completely. I wouldn't buy a hat with that ugly M logo that they went to for like 10 years. It was just god-awful.
It sure
was. They
needed
to go back to the glove with the MB.
Why would you leave the glove for that?
Somebody made a mistake.
Yes, they certainly did. Okay, so the other question I had was, you said you went, so you've been Oklahoma, what was the other southern state besides Kentucky, or was that
Arkansas.
The only one? Arkansas. So, 3 Midwestern states, 3 what I would call southern states. What do you consider yourself? Do you consider yourself a Midwesterner because you started in the Midwest? Do you consider yourself a Southerner with a Midwestern twist like I announced you? What do you consider yourself?
That's probably what I'm closer to now, even though I'd like to think of myself as the opposite.
Which one? You're closer to Southerner?
The Southerner with a Midwestern twist. I still like to think of myself as a Midwesterner, but I'm not. Sadly, I'm not. I like cheese, though.
Okay, well, there you go. Now, are there dairy farms in Kentucky?
Yes, there are somewhere.
Okay.
But not too many.
Okay.
You probably have to go maybe out to Western Kentucky to find those, and that's a long way away from here. Everything around here is horse farms.
So that's true, yeah, because you're over by Kentucky Derby country.
Yes.
Is there any world in which you would put Kentucky in the Midwest?
I'd try to argue it, but I would fail miserably. they'd look at things that, like political type stuff that we don't want to get into here. So we're probably a southern state.
Yeah. Yep. I was surprised to hear you say that Oklahoma is St. Louis Cardinals country. I would have thought a Texas team would have been Oklahoma.
It's probably becoming more and more so now that, the Texas Rangers are closer and they came up in the early 90s. Is that when they started? No, the Texas Rangers have been around a long time. I'm thinking of the new stadium. I'm sorry. But longer than that, are you familiar with like KMOX, the radio station out of St. Louis?
No. Kim?
No.
It is a super powerful radio station. That for a long, long time, when our parents were of baseball listening age, that they broadcast St. Louis Cardinals games all over the Midwest. They were the furthest team west of the Mississippi for a long time until L.A. and San Francisco came out.
Mm-hmm.
So with that radio broadcast and everybody having their AM radios and they could get this broadcast from St. Louis all over the Midwest, everybody was a Cardinals fan.
Yeah, so that definitely sways my opinion of Missouri being in the Midwest, though I'd have to say probably not, because I could go either way on that, but now I'm going to say no to St. Louis.
The St. Louis Arch is the gateway to the West, so if it's not the Midwest, what is it?
I think it's...
Is it the East?
It could be Southeast, even.
Yeah.
That's pretty high up to be Southeast.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I gave it some consideration for the Midwest. But there's a lot of things Southern to me about Missouri. Maybe not necessarily St. Louis, but Southern Missouri for sure.
I have not been to Missouri, so I don't know much about it.
My first freshman year of college was at Missouri.
Oh, well, then you have more insight than the two of us put together.
Well, I don't remember much of that year.
Okay.
Is that why you call it your first freshman year?
Yes, exactly.
I think that's a perfect segue into your expertise, which anyone who knows you at all knows you are a beer. And I don't know, maybe, is it just beer or is it also bourbon and whiskey? What do you consider yourself an expert in? Is it just beer or more?
Well, I don't consider myself technically an expert in anything, but I'm a beer nerd for sure.
Okay, well, expert in the purposes of this podcast, which we always put expert in quotes.
Yeah. I don't know much about bourbon other than I try to be there in the right place at the right time to get some.
Okay. Because you do stand in line for bourbon, right?
I have stood in line for bourbon. Not many times. Mainly beer.
So you're a beer nerd. Kim, would you also describe yourself as a beer nerd or would you use some other term?
I would accept beer nerd at this point in time, but not to the level of Todd. Todd can bring so much to the table in terms of things that he goes out and finds, very unique finds in terms of beer things. I have a few things for him, actually, that I'm like, ooh, these were special releases, so I want to save these for Todd and for some people that we know down in Lexington. But I would definitely defer to Todd as a person who procures definitely more unique finds in the beer space.
Okay. So I guess that's a good place to start. Where did all this start with for you? Where does this beer nerdness, I was going to say beer fanaticism, but where does this come from? When did it start? Tell me a little bit about that.
Aside from stupid college drinking, which doesn't really count because after that I quit drinking for like 10, 15 years just because I was tired of it, not for any other reason. Mm-hmm. We got into becoming beer nerds, my wife, and Michelle and I, on a vacation in Wisconsin about 8, 9 years ago, where we were in a restaurant and Michelle said, "Give me a local beer." And they brought her a New Glarus Spotted Cow.
Well, there you go.
Which is just a basic cream ale.
Yes.
And she tried that. She said, "This is great." She handed it to me and I tried that. This tastes way better than I remember beer tasting like. So we started peppering our poor waitress with questions about New Glarus beer. And you could tell that she didn't know or care much. But she was enough to tell us there's a bunch of different New Glarus beers around. So we spent the rest of our vacation both going back to the places I lived in Wisconsin and going to grocery stores and whatnot, looking for New Glarus beer. And on part of that, we actually stopped at New Glarus Brewery and got to try some beers that we didn't know anything about. One of them was a fruit beer. And we can talk about that later when I think there's some questions about it.
Yes.
So every stop we went, we would go into a store and whatever different New Glarus beer was on the shelf, we would buy a 6-pack of it. And then we brought it all back to Kentucky and we started telling friends about beer and saying, come over and try these beers with us. Uh-huh. And I think some of them thought we were completely nuts. And I don't think we talk to those people anymore. But there were other people that were interested, and that got us into like the local brewery scene that had just started up about that same time. And after that, we were off, and every time we take a vacation now, it revolves around what kind of breweries can we visit wherever we go.
Well, you certainly don't have a problem because there are breweries everywhere.
Yes.
Which is great because you can see all kinds of different places.
Yeah, we usually... Michigan is a place we go regularly, in St. Louis, and we've been up in your neck of the woods a few times.
Mm-hmm. You seem to come when I can't get together with you. We have to rectify that situation.
Yes.
But New Glarus is, I'm sure you know this, New Glarus can only be, they don't ship across state lines, so you have to be in Wisconsin to get New Glarus.
Or you have to know people that are in Wisconsin on vacation or visiting family.
Exactly, yes.
And say, hey, go to a grocery store because New Glarus beer is very easy to get. It's not difficult if you're in Wisconsin.
Correct. Yeah, it's everywhere in Wisconsin.
In fact, right now, my wife has somebody that, a former coworker in Wisconsin, getting beer to bring back to Kentucky that we can get probably later this week. I'm very excited about it.
So what's your favorite New Glarus?
It's a toss-up between Belgian Red and Raspberry Tart.
Oh.
Raspberry Tart sounds good.
I think I've had the Raspberry Tart.
They're straight-up fruit beers, and they're delicious, and they're different, and nobody else makes a beer like them because nobody else can.
Why? Because they have special equipment, or they're just really good at making beer?
The head brewer's a wizard, is the simple way of explaining it.
Okay.
He's got a secret brewery that's called the Fruit Cave where he makes these beers. And that is the one place that's not on the main brewery site and you can't go walk around and see it.
In fact,
you kind of have to know somebody to know tell you even where it is to go find it. I actually don't know where it is.
Oh, I was going to say, have you been there?
I would love to go there. But I'd be on a long list of people that want the same thing.
I was going to say, they blindfold you, put you in the back of the car, you know, drive you around for about 3 hours, and then they release you into the secret brewery, and then they have to do the same on the way back. Yeah.
Yes.
I can just see it now. Yeah.
I'd sign up.
So I imagine that you've been to all, not all, but you've been to many Wisconsin breweries, probably Line and Kugel's.
No.
You haven't been to Line
and Kugel's? I haven't been to that one.
Do you not like Line and Kugel's?
No.
They're not good?
Not particularly.
Oh, okay. Well, there's a Hall of Famer.
I wouldn't say they're not good. I just say it's not my favorite.
Okay.
Yeah, she likes that lemon shandy, probably.
She likes the summer shandy. You nailed it. Yep.
Yes.
In fact, she uses the word love when she's talking about summer shandy.
Well, that's understandable.
Have you had a summer shandy, Kim?
Oh, yeah. I used to use that. That would be my river beer. So
river beer.
Back in the... Yeah, so if I would go tubing down a river... Mm-hmm. And I had adult beverages with me, I would typically take the shandy. Well, then I learned that kind of got too sweet, sitting there in the heat, and taking the river down. So I actually changed over just to a regular Coors Light I would drink on the river. But I haven't gone river tubing in a while, so I need to remedy that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, this brings up a couple of questions. First of all, Todd, this is one of the Hall of Famers questions. What are the different categories and what do they mean? For instance, saisons, ambers, blondes, fruits, cream ales. We don't know. We get these, you guys are so great to send us these beers, but we don't know what we're doing. We think we're doing okay when we pick one that might be opposite from the other, but the Hall of Famer likes categories, as you might know. She likes boundaries of states. She doesn't want to separate a state to tell you that part of it is in the Midwest. It has to be the whole state. We like categories. Can you categorize beer?
I can, but I think everyone would tune out long before I got into it.
Okay.
You're correct. There's a lot of different styles, and a lot of it's just based on the yeasts that are used, the malts that are used, the hops or the level of hops being used. And then you get into other flavorings beyond that. Yeah, it can get pretty boring for people that don't care. The question from last week was about sours and saisons.
Yes. Yep. That was just what I was about to ask you. Oh, is it okay. Saisons?
Yes.
Oh, saison. I've been calling it saisons.
No.
Yeah, it's not a raisin.
It's like Hefehausen then. You're telling me I'm wrong. It's saison.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yep. All right. Tell me about them.
Okay. So a saison is really, if I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. It's like a Belgian simple beer designed for just drinking at any time of the day, and it's not supposed to really affect you, like a table beer or a farmhouse ale. They usually kind of, they're dry, but they're not necessarily sour or hoppy.
Okay.
If that makes any sense at all.
Well, I think it does.
If you wanted to try a saison in your area particularly, I asked around and you could try a Saison DuPont or a Boulevard Tank 7. Those are two good, commonly available Saison styles that are not expensive.
Saison DuPont? I'm writing these down. What's the other one? What is
Boulevard
it?
Tank 7.
Okay. Well, like I said last week, I liked the Saison that my brother drank at the restaurant we were at. And it was a nice table beer. And that brings up another question. Kim has mentioned a river beer. You have mentioned a table beer and a farmhouse beer is a table beer as well. What can you categorize types of beer? What might I have before dinner? Are there before dinner and after dinner beers? Like there are wines, dessert wines, are there dessert beers?
Yeah. Oh, there's definitely dessert beers. Those are more of the darker beers that you kind of tend towards liking with additional flavors and or barrel treatments.
Okay. What do you mean by barrel treatment?
Like they put the beer in a bourbon barrel or a different spirit barrel or a wine barrel.
Ooh, no wonder I like them. Yeah. Now we're talking, Todd.
So yeah, those tend to get higher alcohol content in that something that you don't seem to be as enthused about because you have to drink the whole thing by yourself.
Yeah. Well, that was another question that the Hall of Famer had. And I don't know if you're going to know this because you don't proclaim to be you don't proclaim to be any type of expert, but I am calling you a beer expert, but I'm not calling you a cider expert. But one of the questions was, why does cider seem to have more percent alcohol by volume as compared to beer? Or is that just totally wrong?
I think generally you're accurate. Kim, do you know the answer?
No, it might have to do with the fermentation process, though, with the apples and the cider.
That would that was involved. Generally my theory going to go that direction is that mm-hmm. It's tougher to make the sweeter ciders that most people like to drink at ABV levels that are lower.
Okay.
They can sometimes make the drier ones that way, but people don't really like those either, so they put more alcohol in the drier ones as well.
Okay. That makes a little bit more sense. So now, are there beers? So you two love your beer. And I have proclaimed to hate beer until they've been sent to me. And there are some beers, as you've learned, that I like. But I want to, for wine for me, because I do love wine, I have wine that I will only drink in the summer and versus wine that I'll only drink in the winter. I can't even think of drinking a cab in the summer. I mean, I'll do it, but it's not preferred. Is that the same with beer, or is beer pretty much year round? Would you drink a river beer, Kim, in the winter, for instance?
No, not necessarily. Now, I know Todd is completely different on this fence, but I very much go with the seasonal beers. So right now, I very much want something light or fruity or something to match kind of the weather outside. So, you know, mm-hmm. you go outside, you mow the lawn, you come in, you want a nice lawnmower beer that is just really light and really kind of just crisp and hits the spot. In the wintertime, we're hibernating. I like my stouts better at that point in time. So the darker beers, the heavier beers, that's when I tend to gravitate towards those.
Okay, so it's similar to beer for you. I mean, for wine for me.
Yes.
So, yeah, like Kim was saying, right before we came on the podcast, my wife and I split a 750 milliliter of a 15% barrel-aged stout.
Oh, nice.
See, now
that is solid.
So yeah, we'll drink a big stout here in the summertime. We're not that picky about it.
Okay. Now, would a Guinness or a Left Hand Brewery Nitro be considered a stout?
Yes.
Okay. So the fact that I drink that in the summer is kind of weird to you, Kim. Not weird to you, Todd.
Yeah.
Right.
I will occasionally, you know, I will occasionally drop in to a stout, depending on what, you know, the release is. If it's a special release, I might try it out. But most of the time, I keep that to the winter. So,
okay, that's how I feel about my wine. Mm-hmm. So if the two of you both are beer fanatics, so if you had to explain to someone like me who is not, you're hesitant to put them into categories, how would you convince me that I would indeed like some sort of beer somewhere in the world? What would you say? How would you get me to fall in love with beer?
Well, I'd ask what you've liked and didn't like about beer to begin with. And then I would work off of that. And something I've learned from smarter people than myself is, when you hear somebody give you those answers, try to think of not only things that they said that they liked, but things that are completely off of that grid of liked and didn't like. Because like we said before, there's so many different kinds of beer.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody that knows this can say, okay, you like this, you don't like this. They might ask a couple other questions. Do you like, what kind of foods do you like? Do you like wines? What kind of wines do you like, sweeter or drier or more acidic? And then they will pull something out from left field and they'll say, try this. And you'll say, ooh, I didn't even realize that beer could taste like this.
Exactly.
Which seems like that's something that's been happening with KJ here lately.
Uh-huh. It's exactly what's happened to me. So is there an equivalent to a sommelier for a beer expert?
Yes.
And what is that person called?
A Cicerone. Cicerone.
A Cicerone. Okay, I'm waiting for the Netflix documentary about that to come out, because I found the sommelier one fascinating. And so I guess my question for you, Todd, and maybe you too, Kim, because you both love beer so much, have either of you considered giving up your current careers and just going into being a beer master, a cicerone, or even just a brewmaster. Is that the right word, brewmaster?
Oh, brewing beer is hard work, like way harder work than I'm old enough to be able to tolerate, and okay. I wouldn't last very long.
There's a lot of science involved, mm-hmm. and I that can too. Tell you, as someone who nearly failed science multiple times in different grade levels, that is not my wheelhouse. I love drinking it, but there's a difference between love drinking it and wanting to make it. I had a family member say, hey, you should start brewing beer. And I was like, that sounds like work. I would rather just buy it and drink it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I can understand that. Well, we'll just have to wait for Patrick Moffitt's brand, I guess, because he is.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what he can brew up.
Yeah, me too. So we have another question from the Hall of Famer, and she wanted to know, what do IBUs stand for?
International Bitterness Units, I think.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yep.
Really?
It's a theoretical scale of how bitter a beer tastes to a person. And if you get too deep into it, there's a lot of theories that say it's bogus.
Oh.
Because that over a certain IBU level, which is either 65 or 85, people argue that you can't taste more bitter. That's as bitter as you can taste.
Oh, so there's a maximum.
And then people will advertise IBUs way over 100.
But do you want bitterness in your beer?
And it's just marketing.
Okay.
If you like West Coast IPAs that are really hoppy, you do.
Oh,
I personally am not a big fan of them.
No.
Yeah, no, not here either.
My wife loves them.
So, okay, so I would assume then that sours, which we didn't talk about much yet, that sours have low IBUs.
Yes.
Nailed it.
Very low IBUs.
Okay.
Good job. See, you know a lot more than you think.
Yes, I certainly do, after today. So sours, Todd, I'm guessing that sours are going to be a completely different topic than saisons. For instance, they don't go together,
yeah.
even though they're listed together in comments by people sometimes.
If you get deep into saisons, they very much become sours.
Oh.
So if you like a regular saison, get back with me and I will try to lead you down that rabbit hole. But you don't want to go down that rabbit hole unless you really like saisons.
Okay. And are fruit beers any different than sours? Sounds like they probably are.
Yes. Absolutely. And those two new Glarus beers I mentioned are the gold standard of fruit beers.
Okay. Well, we live very
close to the Belgian
Red
and the Raspberry Tart.
All right.
Go try them.
We are going to.
If you guys don't like them, I will send you a shipping label and you can send whatever you didn't want to me.
Okay. All right. So something that goes hand in hand with beer. So I'm interested to find out when you became a fan of this. Is pizza. And you told me that you think you might be an expert in pizza. So were you a beer fanatic first or a pizza fanatic first? I think I know the answer, but.
I was a pizza nerd first. Mom made her pizza from scratch back when I was a kid.
Oh.
So we were always excited as a family when it became pizza night. And then she started to have to make two pizzas because between my dad and me, we could eat one by ourselves. And my mom and my sister still needed to eat, so.
Did you carry that pizza-making tradition on into your life, and now do you make pizza? Do you have beer and pizza night where you make the pizza?
We've done that for friends here. I worked at a lot of pizza places along the way as a kid, mainly delivering, not actually making the pizzas, but I would experiment with things in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So between the actual restaurant experience, and I still have the postcard that my mother wrote me when I went off to college of the pizza recipe so I can make pizza dough. I just made one the other night.
Even. Oh, man. Kim, it sounds like we need to drive south to Lexington.
Absolutely.
For some reason, I'm hungry for pizza and beer right now. So let's get out of here because I want to eat a little. Let's see, we do have some pizza. Maybe I'll go eat some.
There you go.
Oh, I've got some leftover pizza, too.
Yeah, yours, I think your pizza is going to be better than the pizza that we have. But before I sign off, I want to say thank you so much, Todd. And again, thank you to Kim. I think a good Central Standard Time was had by all, yes?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, that's it. That's the podcast. Thanks for listening. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Bias Pod, and you can email your questions and comments to MidwestBiasPod@gmail.com. Be sure to rate and review and subscribe or follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Overcast, that's where I get my podcasts. And no, Overcast is not a sponsor of this podcast yet. And especially be sure to rate and review this podcast if you really like it. If you don't like it, no worries. Don't even waste your time. Really, it's fine. So thank you. I appreciate it, and I appreciate you. Bye now.
My first freshman year of college was at Missouri.